Good morning. Welcome to the First Parish Church of Stowe and Acton, a welcoming Unitarian Universalist congregation. My name is Linda Lair, and I serve as the Vice President of the Board of Trustees. Child care is available during the service in the nursery in the lower level of Fellowship Hall, which can be reached by walking through either level of our connector building and then taking the elevator or stairs to the lower level. If the need arises any time during the service, please feel free to take your child there where she or he will be well cared for. If you are not sure where to go, one of the ushers will guide you. Everyone is invited to coffee hour in Fellowship Hall immediately following the service. To get there, please exit the church through the door to my left, follow the hallway to the end, go down the stairs or take our new elevator, and follow the arrow to Fellowship Hall. If this is your first time with us, we're happy to have you here. Please sign one of our guest books, which are located either in the vestibule, by our new front entrance of the church, or at the visitor's table and coffee hour, so we can put your name on our mailing list.
Thank you, Linda. And now, as community is so important to us, at this particular service, we began with an opportunity to greet your neighbor. So I invite you to reach out now. But before you do, I'd like you all to greet our intern minister for next year. She'll be starting in September, but she's able to be with us here today to take part in the worship service. I'd like you to meet Eileen Gillespie. And now I invite you to reach out and greet each other, particularly if we have any guests with us here today. Give them an extra welcome.
Good morning, everyone. We're going to start with a gathering song, number 397 in your book, but you probably don't need it. It's one that we've done before, and we'll teach it to you right now. Go this, and there's some gestures that go along with it.
Indeed, together this morning, we welcome this new day, a day not of our making, but a precious gift given to us to both use wisely and enjoy. Today, we also welcome not just this new day, but a new season. Winter has been long and hard this year, but the earth has tilted. The days are longer. The sun brighter, the snow melting. And even below the snow, we know there's new life stirring. Let us rejoice in this new day and in this new season and in the power and strength of gathered community. As Marcia Rising lights our chalice, I invite you to join in the unison words of chalice lighting printed in your order of service. From the holy fire that burns within each of us, we again bring a spark to rekindle our common flame. We fan this fire with our love and commitment until it burns as a beacon of hope for the world and as a lamp of welcome to all who seek to find a spiritual home in our community. And as we're so fortunate to have our intern minister for next year here with us, I thought we'd have a little interview with her, ask her some questions, so you get to know her a little better in advance of next year. So, Eileen, welcome again. You take the podium, and I'll go out here and we'll chat.
Thank you, Reverend Tom.
Again, thanks for being with us. This is a Sunday when we focus on religious education. I understand you grew up in a Unitarian Universalist church. Can you tell us something about your experience then in religious education?
Thank you, Reverend Tom. I did grow up UU, and I have lots of great memories of my RE experiences growing up at Mount Vernon Unitarian Church in Alexandria, Virginia. My home congregation, my parents and I started attending when I was 3. One of my favorite memories was participating in holidays and holy days. I must have been in the 3rd or 4th grade. I loved learning about world religions through celebrating their holidays. And it also felt really meaningful to me that we celebrated Jewish holy days together as a church community, just like my interfaith family did at home, since my mom grew up Jewish. Moving upward, as a middle school student, I loved participating in the Our Whole Lives program, and really feel like it taught me such important lessons that I still draw on going forward, lessons about respect, safety, and consent. I also had great teachers for that program who really made me feel safe and like I could ask any questions that I needed. So that was really special for me. Finally, I was really involved with my high school youth group, which at that point was called YRUU. I was the co-chair of our group for 3 years, and I loved leading discussions on different topics. Our youth group was also really involved with youth activities in our district, so I usually spent one weekend a month at a youth conference, sleeping over and participating in workshops, training, worship, and discussion with youth and adults from all over our district, so from Virginia, Maryland, Delaware, and Pennsylvania. Those experiences were with youth conferences, especially those powerful midnight worship services, were really formative for me in discerning a call to ministry so early in my life, since I decided I'd like to be a minister while in my first year of college.
Great. Well, we're excited about you joining us next year because we know you bring us some special gifts and talents, both to minister to our youth and to our adults. What gifts would you bring to our youth, and what kind of things would you look forward to doing with them?
Well, as I shared earlier, I really enjoyed leading discussions with youth when I was in a leadership position in my high school youth group. And in relationship to my particular interests and gifts, I certainly look forward to talking with youth about world religions, especially religions practiced in India, since this is my area of study. I've also really enjoyed leading small group discussions with youth on topics that they choose around current events. That was something I have done a lot of in college and that I really enjoyed. And I also really look forward to designing youth worship, since youth worship was so powerful and so important in my own life. I think that those worship experiences I had as a high school youth really made me feel like I was not alone, and that I was part of a community that really loved and cared for me. We used to take home a yarn bracelet after each one of our conferences. It was just a strand of different colored yarn. But I kept them on for years after those conferences were over because they just reminded me of those memories of feeling so loved and lifted up by worship. So I really look forward not only to leading discussions with youth, but also designing and having worship services together with youth.
Great. When the intern committee interviewed you, we were impressed with your life experiences and spiritual depth. What things might you teach or bring to our adult community?
I think that one of the great gifts in my life has been the gift of travel, and that was something that was really given to me by my parents, neither of whom really got to travel much as children, and who changed that for me. I think particularly about spending time in our partner church village in Romania as a child and as a teenager. That was so powerful for me, just seeing that great love and all of the common ground I shared with those people whose experiences and whose way of living was so different from mine. And so those experiences of travel as a young person moved me to spend time in India during college and during graduate school. I'll talk more about this later, but I had learned about the Sikh religion when I was 18 and felt a lot of things radically shift in my life as a result, and felt moved to be in India, living a life more centered on devotion and prayer and things like that. So learning about Sikhism and spending all that time in India, I had 4 long visits there, which is about to be 5, since I will be there this summer too, has been transformative for me in a lot of ways, especially the realization that all religions are one, and that they are all equally valid and important. So it has been really, really important for me to learn about all religions, to read and study their scriptures, to visit their places of worship, in order to live out that understanding. And so that's something I love to share with people when I teach and when I learn about world religions. I also bring the gift of devotional music from my background as a UU Sikh, and so I love to share this extraordinary gift of North Indian classical music that really was given also to me as a gift. So that's something really special that I hope to share. And the last thing I'd say is that pastoral care is a way that I imagine my ministry, a really important part of my ministry going forward here in Stowe. I did my chaplain training last summer working with veterans who were in hospice, and certainly an intense way to jump into pastoral care, but something that was really important in my life. So I'm really excited to learn about all of you through that way.
Thank you. That sounds wonderful. And finally, as intern minister, you are here to learn. What kind of things would you most like to learn here, and what do you think we can teach you?
One thing I would say is that I've never been part of such a big church, so that's exciting to me. I grew up in a medium-sized church and then spent time in several smaller churches in my undergraduate and in graduate school. And the church where I work now, First Parish of Malden, is also a small church. So I think there's a lot to learn from such a healthy, growing, vital church like First Parish. I hope to continue learning about preaching and leading rituals during my time here in Stowe. That's something that I have so enjoyed working in a parish now, and also I really enjoyed leading memorial services when I worked as a hospice chaplain, so I think rituals have a lot to teach me. While it's probably not super exciting, I also really look forward to learning about church administration.
Oh no, it's exciting.
I know that Reverend Tom, that the staff, and that many capable lay leaders here in Stowe have a lot to teach me about all of the ins and outs of what it takes to run such a successful and healthy church community. And it turns out, surprisingly, I actually really enjoy church administration. So I'm excited to learn about that. And finally, I would just say that I look forward to all of the moments of learning in the future that I sort of can't anticipate or name yet. I just felt a lot of kindness and open-heartedness in my interview with the internship committee, and so I know that I will be taught and formed with care here at First Parish. Thank you.
Thank you. And will you all join me in welcoming Eileen?
I'd like to welcome you all to the magic of FPC Awards. This was written by the RE committee. And enjoy.
Hello, I am Harry Potter. You might be reminded today of another magical place called Hogwarts. There, students are sorted into 4 houses based on their abilities and talents.
Yeah, by a completely mental, mind-reading talking hat.
When you say it that way, Ronald Weasley, it just sounds silly. I'm the sorting hat, here on sabbatical with our sister school.
Oh, I know. FPC Awards. In 1568, when Prince Sigmund of Transylvania wanted...
Hermione!
Sorry, I was just getting to the part where FPC Awards is also a place of magic.
5 points to Granger. FPC Warts is indeed a place where children, youth, and adults come together to be their best selves, to learn about the world, and to give back, all while developing their faith. Nothing is more magical than that. Wouldn't you agree, Potter and Weasley?
Yes, Professor Michelle McGall.
everyone who enters FPC Warts has a place where their talents can shine and where they can grow spiritually. Let's hear from the heads of the four FPC Warts Houses of Religious Education.
I am the head of the House of Community and all the fun things we do at FPC Warts, like parties, potlucks, haunted house, Club UU, youth groups.
I am the head of the House of Music and Art. We encourage all at FPC Warts to express themselves through music, poetry, dance, coloring, theater, and making things with popsicle sticks. And the Mummers Play, Nativity in a Box, the Talent Show, and lots of creative projects.
And I am the head of the House of Knowledge and represent wonderful things we learn here about Unitarian Universalist history, our seven principles, and how to put them into action. World religions, First Chalice, Coming of Age, and of course, O-W-L, Owl.
Wait, they make you take ordinary wizarding levels here, too?
No, Harry, it's the Our Whole Lives program.
I represent the House of Social Action and all the ways we put our principles into action and give back to the church, to the community, and throughout the world.
Let the sorting begin. Remember, friends, cheer for your house.
All right, Hagrid, bring the first years in, please. First years, if you can line up right here, please. Thank you. At this time, I will call the names of those to be sorted. You will come up, sit on the stool, and we will place the sorting hat on your head, and you will be told which house to go to. First, I call Elsa McNeil. Please have a seat.
You really like being with your friends and learn best when you're sharing ideas with a group. You fit great in the House of Community.
Next, I call William Lundberg. William, come and sit down, please. And here is the hat.
Compassionate, wants to help the world. I know you will be a leader in the House of Social Action.
Social Action is right here. Next, I call Jonathan Daisy. Whoops. And I'm going to place the hat on you.
I hear a song in your heart. You're very musical. You'd do well in the House of Music. Oh, but wait. You also love sharing and learning with our children and youth. What to do, what to do? Well, we can always use good teachers in the House of Knowledge.
All right, now I call Laura Cataldo Holmes. And here's the hat. Whoops, I typed it backwards, sorry. There you go.
You too love being with your friends and are very compassionate, with rivers of creativity flowing through you. I think you can express yourself best in the House of Music and Art. Woo-hoo.
All right. This sorting process can be quite tricky. Now I call Diane Miller. You'll have to remove your hat, Miss Diane. All right, here's a sorting hat for you.
You live out your belief in social justice and always include our children and youth in your journey. I think you'll feel comfortable in the House of Social Action.
I call Walter Stadolnik. All right, Walter, here's the hat for you.
Aha! You have a love for learning, and you have curiosity. I bet you'd like it in the House of Knowledge.
All right, now I call Miss Nolly Srivastava. All right, here's the hat for you, Miss Nolly. Oh, jeez.
Yes.
All right, Nolly. Okay.
Yes, yes.
She's very excited, sorting hat.
Well, she could be in the House of Knowledge because she knows so much FPC Wart's history. But she clearly loves people and the children here more than anything. So, Nolly, go have fun with Club UU in the House of Community.
And last but not least, we have Mr. Peter Fisk. And here is the sorting hat for you, sir.
I think everyone will agree with me when I say you clearly march to the beat of a different drummer. We need your talent in the House of Music and Art.
All right. Thank you. Congratulations to all of our candidates who got sorted. And now we need to hear from Headmaster Tombalador.
We've had a fine sorting today. I see many more people eager to participate in the magic of FPC Warts. To find your place in one of our fine programs, please see the Religious Education Elves at the sorting feast in the vestry after the service. And now, Harry, where are you? Harry, you have to perform your noble duty. Carry the FPC lantern, the magic lantern that leads all those going to religious education. All, please follow Harry around the church if you're going to RE. As you know, we are in the midst of our stewardship campaign, doing well, but there are still quite a few pledges to come in. I guess we received close to 20 last week, and among those pledges that have been coming in, we're very pleased that many of them reflect a significant increase in what people are able to contribute. But whatever is appropriate for you, it's so helpful to us to have your pledge in advance so that we can figure what we have in our budget to go forward with the next year. So if you have not yet pledged, you can certainly see someone from stewardship committee or do what I did, and that is just go online. It was really, for a non-techie like me, it was even easy. So, and part of what we've been doing is part of the stewardship campaign is inviting people to share something about their experience, the reason they're drawn to First Parish with you, the reason they support First Parish with their time and their talent and, to the extent they can, with their treasure. And so today, Meg Costello is going to share with us. And Meg, I'd love to have you come up and do that.
Hi. I first walked into First Parish Church 25 years ago to part one of a sermon about Krishnamurti, the peace activist during World War I. It was Beethoven's birthday, and Ernest Goldman performed at Vienna Concert Pianist Quality. So I had to come back for part two of Krishnamurti and more of Ernest's magnificence. I see First Parish as a community that practices the making of a peaceful world. I am a devout believer in small group ministry. I see it as a way of developing deeper friendships and relationships, in large part by learning how to leave the space in between words for another to share. I have existential friends from this community, some come and gone. I spent many years meeting Joanne Albright at the church doors after Sunday service. We both grew up in the Allegheny Mountains of Western Maryland and West Virginia. We'd be homesick together. It's mountain weather today. And we'd walk over to coffee hour, wait in line together, sharing a week's worth of news. Our mutual love of the mountains satisfied something each Sunday. I'm glad that our culture is talking more openly about race now. And I've often wished that we talk more about class, about economics, and how financial stability affects relationship to power, to airspace, and assumptions. What I love about First Parish is the layering of time, of friends, of memories. I've been a mentor for coming of age three times and expect to continue those friendships over a lifetime. There are people here, like Vicki Tabor, who taught my son in RE and whose son I taught hers. Our kids remember those kindnesses shown them while young and cherish those connections, and we them. I have been part of a career support group for 10 years, a group smaller but still meeting and connecting profoundly once monthly. I have been a member of a life energy group for the past 6 years, another monthly connection with significant impact upon each other's lives. And each group I am in, where we intermingle our lives with those of others in our church community, we all become better people, specifically because we are loved and listened to and cherished by our fellow community members. I attend our coffee house with fervent devotion, seated as close to the stage as I can, the best deal in town, hands down. I've heard some stunningly beautiful sermons in this church. I'm an undergraduate theology major. My favorite genre is the sermon, 20 precious minutes to communicate a valuable lesson in a most eloquent manner. I treasure the Ferry Beach Main retreats each year, another fabulous deal. A weekend on the ocean with friends and activities, and new friends to meet and kids to have fun with, and great food and hearing the ocean at night. I am not a financially secure person in this congregation. I have, however, donated many labor hours. Labor provides an opportunity to meet new people, come to understand people you might not have initially cared for, jump into any project and work side by side with fellow members. I never saw Julie Weeks' father during the year, but always looked forward to the church fair when George Weeks and I would meet each year and work together, breaking down the tables, cleaning up after the fair. And Julie always accused me of flirting with her father, and I shamelessly admitted it. I went bowling last Sunday with teens and other mentors. We had a blast, cheering for each other, getting to know new friends across generations. Paul Reisberg and I are driving out to Amherst tomorrow morning to reconnect with Jean Darlington, to take one of our cherished elders out to lunch. I get job referrals from church members for my organizing decluttering business. I grew up in a large family, a 7-kid family. I get homesick for the rowdiness of big families up here in Massachusetts. And every once in a while, I find someone who understands big family energy. I am a mentor right now to Chow Wen. We got to be friends by being rowdy during a rousing card game at Ferry Beach during our annual First Parish Church retreat, and we've been friends ever since. First Parish is not a finite, static organization or community. Over 25 years, I have watched and participated in the ebbs and flows of friends, of things that satisfy and things that make me lonesome, of friends and family for whom I have lit candles. Here in this building is a history of loved ones lost, sorrows, joys. I was here when lightning hit the steeple during a Sunday service, when the clap was so loud that we all became quiet and listened as the electricity traveled across the lightning protection wires in the attic above and then down into the ground beneath the church. No one told us to be soundless that day. We all understood without words, and we listened as a community to the magic of something greater than ourselves. I have always found fun and rewarding things to do here. I have changed, found groups of friends, forever friends, and it has multiplied a community. I was in charge of the parsonage for several years, where I crossed paths with Jim Eisenberg and Marion Fletcher's son, Wayne. Probably 10 years ago, we spruced up the parsonage together. And that closeness is still there a large chunk of time later. So you see, First Parish is friends created, relationships established with kids, small group ministry, journey groups, renovation projects, having friends like Nancy Muldari, who welcomed me, her unannounced friend, with an offering of whatever she is drinking or eating, for talk around the kitchen table. The bottom line is First Parish is an amorphous, pulsating, expanding and contracting mass. And you jump right in, do what needs to be done, contribute what you are capable of contributing. Things increase exponentially over the years, friends, groups, memories. What you put into it, what of yourself you share with others, is returned to you. It's not perfect, and perfection is not the point. The point is peace, being part of the creation of a peaceful community, to go out into the world with the lessons we have learned here, a better self because of First Parish that we share with the world.
Thank you so much, Meg. Each week, we provide you with an opportunity for generosity, opportunity to share some of your resources with not only this church community and support its programs, but also with a selected nonprofit, national, international, or local, usually with a very important connection to the church. And in this month, where certainly is the case, we're sharing it with our urban ministry. We are one of the 50-odd churches that sponsor the urban ministry, and many people this month have been in volunteering in many ways in Roxbury for the urban ministry. So I ask for your generosity as always. The morning offering will now be gratefully accepted for both the work of the church and for the urban ministry.
I invite you to read together responsive reading number 652, words of Channing. I'll read the regular text and you can read the italics. The great end in religious instruction is not to stamp our minds upon the young, but to stir up their own.
Not to make them see with our eyes, but to look inquiringly, steadily with their own.
Not to give them a definite amount of knowledge, but to inspire a fervent love of truth.
Not to form outward regularity, but to touch inward strings.
Not to bind them by ineradicable prejudices to our particular sect or peculiar notions.
But to prepare them partial, conscientious judging of whatever subjects may be offered to their decision.
Not to burden the memory, but to quicken and strengthen the power of thought.
Not to impose religion upon them in the form of arbitrary rules, but to awaken the conscience, the moral discernment.
In a word, the great end is to awaken the soul, to excite and cherish spiritual life.
In the book Tuesday with Maury, the author Mitch Albom writes, "Have you really had a teacher, one who saw you as a raw but precious thing, a jewel with wisdom which could be polished to a proud shine? If you are lucky enough to have found your way to such a teacher, you will always find your way back." That's what I would like us to do this morning, find our way back to those teachers who had the most impact on our life, the ones that saw our potential, who guided us, who opened doors for us, showed us new worlds, who inspired us, who in no small way contributed to who we are today. It's one of those teachers coming to mind now. It might be a teacher in the traditional sense, you know, maybe grade school or high school or college. Or it might be a Sunday school teacher, RE teacher, a mentor, or even a grandparent or a neighbor who helped you to better understand the world around you and yourself. I want you to think about that person. What was it about her or him that made it possible to have such an impact on your life? You know, maybe they were brilliant, knew everything about their field of study, and gave you a lot of knowledge. Or maybe they were engaging and fun. But good teaching is not about just cramming information into a student's brain or even having a good time with a student. Good teaching comes, I think, from the identity and the integrity of the teacher. There's something about our relationship to those great teachers. It's characterized by authenticity and trust. Those special teachers share with us more than content in good times. They share themselves. The well-known Quaker teacher and writer Parker Palmer, when asked about teachers, said, "We teach who we are." When I was in the sixth grade, I started singing in the school choir under the direction of the new, sharply dressed teacher, Jack Feldheimer. He seemed to get promoted as I did, and I continued with him as my music teacher and choir director all the way through high school. I had choir first period every single day from the sixth grade through the 12th, something I don't think we see in public schools now. It was a great way to start the day. Now, Jack was a gay man who lived with his life partner, and it was never an issue. At that difficult time when I began to come to terms with my own sexuality, it was just wonderful to know he was there in that position. He was the first positive role model of a gay man I encountered, and I'm sure he had me figured out. It was never raised, even though we communicated a lot in our student-teacher relationship. Nothing was ever said. Yet I learned so much from how he lived his life. And yes, I learned a little bit about music and singing, too. The poet Christopher Loge wrote these words. Come to the edge. It's too high. Come to the edge. We might fall. Come to the edge. And they came. And she pushed them. And they flew. That's what I feel many good teachers did for me. Brought me to the edge and gave me a push. In divinity school, I had the privilege of being in the last class taught by the rather renowned Professor Richard Niebuhr, the last class that he taught. His then soft, very soft-spoken, frail voice could barely be heard in the classroom. But the love with which he shared of his subject ignited me. The course material was difficult. I wasn't sure I could really grasp it. I don't think I ever worked my brain harder than when I was writing the first paper for him. But then I never got the paper back. Finally, I asked some other students and finally his secretary about this. And I learned that he only graded one paper a day in order to give it his full attention. When I finally got that paper back, I couldn't believe it. I had received an A, but that wasn't what was important. In beautiful penmanship, covering several pages, he had written a paper back for me. Obviously, he had spent hours engaged with my thoughts and responded to them with academic rigor as well as great respect. And there it was attached to my paper. I felt like I had come to this place and with a bit of push, jumped into a new world. Now, I'm sure all of you have had some experiences like that, had a teacher that really shared of themselves, had a teacher that challenged you and really gave you the push to take the leap forward. You know, next year, we will all be part of a teaching congregation for our intern minister. And she will be teaching us from the many gifts that she brings. I look forward to what we will learn from her experience, and I hope we can be great teachers for her. But I'm sure we won't be her first great teachers in her life. And so I've asked her to share at this point a few thoughts on that as part of this reflection.
One of my favorite poets, Khalil Gibran, has wise words to offer on the subject of teachers in his famous book, The Prophet. He says, "No man can reveal to you aught but that which already lies half asleep in the dawning of your own knowledge. The teacher who walks in the shadow of the temple among his followers gives not of his wisdom, but rather of his faith and his lovingness. If he is indeed wise, he does not bid you enter the threshold of his wisdom, but rather leads you to the threshold of your own mind." I have had many important teachers in my life, but one comes to mind immediately. To echo Reverend Tom's words, this person was one of my music instructors. He has been a teacher, friend, and spiritual guide to me as I have gone through many changes in my life. 3 years ago, I traveled to Chandigarh, India, to participate in a program through the U.S. Department of State. I spent 11 weeks studying Punjabi language for 40 hours a week. I will participate in this program again for the third time this summer, and Chandigarh has become like a second home to me. But that first summer, it was a new city, I had just graduated from college and was preparing for graduate school. My parents had recently divorced, and my father's new wife was pregnant with my soon-to-be little brother. Upon my return to the United States, I would move from South Florida, where I went to college, to Boston for Divinity School, a city I had not visited since my coming of age 10 years before when I was in the eighth grade. I was feeling lost and without roots in many ways. And when I walked into the Sikh temple next to my language school to ask about the possibility of devotional music lessons, I felt again that strange sense of being at home that had hit me in many other Sikh temples, which was ultimately the reason I was in India to study Punjabi in the first place. The music teacher sat me down on the floor next to him in the small classroom that teemed with light. He brought me tea and lunch and patted me on the head. I asked him, "How often should I come and how much should I pay you?" And he told me, "Come as often as you like and pay me nothing." My teacher, Sunpreet Singh, went on to teach me classical North Indian music 5 days a week for free, to hold my hand and cry with me as I asked for advice about all of the changes in my life, to give me the shoes off his own feet to walk home in the rain because he didn't want me to ruin mine, and to teach me every day with his faith and his lovingness. I feel so lucky to have a teacher like Sunpreet, as well as all of the other teachers that have been so pivotal in my life. It would take me many sermons to thank and honor them all. With their humility and gentleness, these teachers have brought me to the threshold of my own mind. And wherever I teach or learn now, my teachers are my silent companions, walking alongside me and blessing me along the way.
I believe that the hallmark of the great teacher is not the things she taught you, but the way she opened you up to learning, inspired you, and helped to put you in touch with what's inside you. It's how she helped you discover your best self and your true potential. A good teacher is one who affirms that we are somebody who has gifts and talents, just that we are somebody. For me, after my time spent with a great teacher, I always felt like I was overflowing with ideas, with inspiration, with determination. Perhaps you've had that feeling too.